Genius, we help you discover your many layers. You peel, you cry, you wake up with fresh eyes. Question life, question humanity, question society, but most of all, question yourself.
I'm Primavera, just call me like that. And well, I'm, what could I call myself? I'm kind of between an artist and a people worker, if I can call that like this. And I'm kind of between some art and social project. And yeah, basically I would say my favorite thing is to talk with people. And I think that's what I was telling my therapist. I think I was born to talk with people. So that's the thing. And yep.
A little bit of context. So Prima and I came up with the name Onions Talk for the podcast at her inner kitchen in Marseille, France, like 2 years ago while we were chopping onions or something while making dinner.
Yeah, pretty true. While making a pretty good weird dinner. However, my background is that I am French, but like kind of half French, half Brazilian, and been living in South America for a big part of my life, and then moved in France, and then started to actually think that the world sucks and that we should do something about that. So yep, that's my background.
So what was it about moving to France that made you feel like the world sucks?
I mean, let's be honest, when you just live close to the, I mean, to the forest and just you have the basics, you don't have to think about a lot of stuff because you have the basics. But anyway, when you move out of this like basic stuff that are quite, you know, in between the, how do you call that? You know, looking at the sky and like just thinking about like simple stuff. I mean, I'm not saying it's like you just only think about simple stuff. It's just like the basics are already quite deep to have a lot of things to think about anyway. But anyway, when you move out of that, and you discover all the, let's say, ugliness and despair and misery. It's, even if it does exist everywhere, of course, but here, when I moved out, I was like, whoa, you have like beautiful stuff also, like awesome stuff, but also you have some, whoa, stuff that sometimes you're kind of giving up on hoping because it's quite heavy. That's why I'm gonna go on Mars and like build up my own community.
But you know, this is like, I've just found it so interesting in all our conversations since we met in France, because I mean, I come from Singapore. You talk about nature and it's like probably the city where you have the least of it. Everything is so man-made, and I cannot relate with those experiences, because it was only till I've started living in Europe that I had these experiences with nature, like real nature. And, you know, the sort of history that we have with, in Singapore with British colonization, the idea is always that colonization was good for us, that it modernized us, that it gave us roads, that it gave us technology, and that we wouldn't have to be farming and, you know, living the hard life, and that it was almost like technology promised the good of everything, and that colonization was the best thing ever that happened to us. And when we really think about that, you know, we, from this sort of Asian perspective, because of historical reasons and cultural reasons, you know, we always look to the West, especially Europe, as rich countries that had welfare benefits, that supported people, that, you know, everything seemed perfect over there. And then moving to France, it was really challenging all of my stereotypes, and yeah, all of my stereotypes. Even before France, like UK was already showing me a bit of that, but France was such a mix of so many different things. I mean, racism was almost like part of my life, having to experience that, and we had many conversations about it as well, even though you are French. Like, that maybe this is something that you want to like share a little bit about, to give that context, because you do speak French and then you moved there, but it wasn't it wasn't the same treatment.
Yep, for sure. Okay, let's be like again a little bit of context for the like non-French people who are going to listen. Basically, I'm coming from a really small country in South America on the continent called French Guiana, and it's like, let's say, neo-colonial space territory of France, as France has a lot of them in Central South America, also Indian Ocean, and yep, and Africa. And so basically, we do speak French as the official language, even if we do have a lot of other languages there. And so, yes, I do speak French. And when I arrived in France, however, when I arrived, actually, my French was really different. So I just had to really adapt so that people actually understand what I'm meaning. So, yeah. However, yeah, if you talk about racism, I mean, I would say, you know, I do have, there is racism in South America, of course, as a entire colonial space and territory and continent, with a definitely only colonial space in South America. And I mean, they do have racism. There is racism there, of course. It's just different. And it's just like the power relations are very much different. And yes, of course, Europe is, and especially France, has to deal with a lot of background that they didn't quite yet accept to deal with. But I mean, if I had to, yeah, maybe we could go deeper after that. But the thing is, it goes deeper than facing racism. I've been working on maybe something that is going to be my next documentary with my Tinder dates. And basically, I've been with a Tinder date from Africa, like Central Africa. And basically, he was telling me about his experience as a Black person in Europe and in France, but like meaning sexually, I mean, in relationships. And I had this sentence that he told me, he was like, but well, it's just worse for you girls, sorry. And I was like, thank you for telling that to me. Yes, I know it's worse for me. And and then he was like, yes, plus, and that was another guy who was telling me that, you know, for me, you're not Black. And I was like, yes, as well, for white people, I'm not white neither. Thank you. So cool. Thank you, people. I don't know what I am, but sure, I'm not part of your crew. So cool. And I mean, that's maybe for me today, as I'm going back on, like thinking back on that, maybe it's part of the worst thing is that I'm not part of neither of those crews, meaning when I'm back in South America, I'm not part of it. When I'm in Europe, I'm not part of it. I'm not part of nothing, which is maybe the biggest racism that I'm kind of facing myself, for myself.
Can you like explain a little bit about sort of like France's history of colonization in Africa and like several parts of Asia, if you have that contextual background?
Yeah, I have some stuff, but I'm really not the good person because it's been a long time. I mean, it's been 1 or 2 years I've been thinking about that, so now everything is gone. But French has actually colonized like a really big part of Africa. I mean, North Africa, West Africa, a part of Central Africa. But that part was shared, I think, with British people and also part of people from Belgium. And maybe a bit of German, I don't remember. Then they gave independence to like part of them step by step, countries after countries, like they have been fighting for independence until like I think it was Algeria, Morocco, and Tunisia was like late 60s or 70s. I don't remember pretty well, but it was super bloody and like super violent, and like France didn't like still doesn't accept to talk about this history of like Algeria and so on. And I think for now, at least in south of France, is the biggest scar in the population, because it's still there. Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody it's actually studying it and like talking about it loud. So it's kind of a super big scar. But I think my history is not linked to Africa, because I mean, a little bit, of course, but not that much. I think we have kind of a link with Asia, because like in French Guyana, we have like communities, huge communities from Indonesia and Vietnam, who had been moved from Asia to French Guyana to actually, I think, work. Basically, I've been growing up with like Asian culture, or at least Indonesian and Vietnamese culture, really much, well, really much. And of course, this is all linked to the like, France being in Vietnam for a long time, and all the stuff that happened in like the 60s and 70s with like America, and like the big history about that. And Second World War. But however, after that, France also has like a lot of islands and so on. And today, from this whole empire of colonial stuff that was possessed by the French people, the only remainings are like 1, 2, 3, maybe 6, 7 islands in the Pacific, Indian Ocean, and the Caribbean. Yep. So big, heavy history. And today, like to give a bit of information in the school and education in France, colonization is not a topic. I mean, we do talk about slavery linked to Africa and how America was built up. So meaning the triangle of commercial stuff, but we do not talk about these colonial history. I mean, really precisely, it's not talked about. And this is a real issue, but well, maybe it's not the day to talk about it. So I think this is what I will, maybe I'm gonna remember some stuff, because also I've been talking with like some people from Nigeria, even if it's not a French background, and like those kind of countries. It's very interesting how the post-colonial history I've been bringing up till today, and all the issues that is coming from that. Meaning, as you said, in Singapore, you are maybe in a technology hunt from this colonial past, with British kind of promising you that, of course, like they bring you the
power.
Yeah, exactly. And you will never need to work again, like a peasant. I don't know how to say that, because it sounded a lot.
Yeah. Really. We are working harder in more stressful environments.
yeah. But I think what is funny is that at least for South America, I feel today like French and European people, French and Portuguese in my experience, let those country in a state where your health, you are between what they thought was like savage and between civilized, I mean, in their way of thinking, meaning that they're not helping enough so that we actually, you know, how do you call that? Emancipate, the people are emancipating themselves, meaning people still need to fight for universities, still need to fight for basic stuff to emancipate themselves, but still they have the Coca-Cola, they all have this thing that is like basic of civilization, if we should talk it like this. So it feels like, yeah, we still have nature, but I mean, it just started that people went back to how the older people were actually cultivating nature and actually doing the right stuff for nature, because actually European people bring really bad stuff. So how do we go back to like stuff that are actually good for nature, blah, 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 blah. And it's actually super new there. I mean, at least in French Guyana, it's like people are kind of rediscovering what was there before or what is actually good. But well, still, internet, I've been having internet, like it was like in my late teenagers.
Can you explain like the situation, like the relationship between France and French Guiana, how it's being governed and the sort of like jobs that are available or not available to local people and the sort of social situation there?
Yeah, sure. So relationship is that it's a pretty, this is still my opinion because I do not know everything. So the government is having this thing that French Guiana is also a territory where you have a lot of resources, which is gold, oil, and also a really strategic, space. Strategic, I don't know.
Geographic location for like trade and stuff. Location. Yeah,
exactly. So those three things are super important, I think, to France, meaning that we are a territory where France actually made deal with big companies such as Total and other oil companies, also with Russian and Americans for the special space thing. And other than that, the relationship with the government is mainly like a kid with a parent, and the kid is kind of bad behaving, and so the parent just like put the kid somewhere in the corner, kind of forgetting about it, unless the kid is getting like somewhere and like breaking something, so the parent get back and just like, oh, come on, you shouldn't do that. That's not okay. I'm already giving you like small money, pocket money for you. You should stop winning. And this is the kind of like hate, I don't know, love, or I don't know, parenthood relationship, which is super what the fuck, because people there are not kids. But anyway, so this is kind of the political state right now. We have been there. I mean, they had been there. The latest, I think, neocolonial territory to get a real university, it has been like only 10 years or something like this. People had to, strike, demonstration to actually have a university. Can you imagine? It's always like crazy for me to think about that. I mean, this is the basics, you know. But and also economically, the territory actually has a lot of taxes, and as people were not able, and I'm not going to say they're not able, I'm going to say that the state didn't work for the people to be able to sustain themselves, meaning that all the, for example, food and supplies were coming from Europe, not even from South America, other countries, because actually French Guiana had been secluded for a really long time, meaning no relationship with borders and countries around. You know, it's exactly like a toxic relationship with a man that is kind of keeping you from all your family. And so... You know, step by step, you don't know why you're not talking to your neighbors, to your family, but you're not, and you don't know why. This is exactly the and you kind of need to go, you know, to the neighbor's doors, back door, to kind of like go inside and say like, hello, I shouldn't be there, but hello, how are you? And it feels like, you know, the borders of French Guiana don't have a lot of security stuff and military, like some places, yes, but not all of them. So you're just like crossing illegally. This feels like you're kind of doing something, you know, that you're done. That is not looking at. So it's kind of, anyway. So yes, and like all the, stuff are coming. We're coming. It's changing. It's really changing. Like they started to actually have a relationship with Brazil and so on, and Mexico. I think so.
Mexico.
And yes.
But then a little bit of context first, right? Because you were when we talked about it, like years ago, you were also saying that all of the food and products had to be imported from Europe, which came at European prices plus shipping fees and auto taxes and all of that stuff, which is a lot more expensive. And how were people able to afford that? Like, what kind of jobs did they have? What was their sort of like monthly salary? Is that not possible for them to live on that?
Yeah, that's the crazy thing is that, so yes, as you said, like taxes, shipping fees and other taxes that were on top that was specific for French Guiana. We had this thing that was called octroi de mer, was like only French Guiana was having that. That was crazy. So basically you could had, I don't know, you had, for example, a yogurt pack of, it was costing €1.82, I don't know, something like €1.82. And then in French Guiana, it would cost like €3, something like this. So it was really like huge difference, sometimes double, crazy. Anyway, so people there, what is crazy is that people there are mainly, a huge part is mainly working for the state. So they're fonctionnaire, so really a state worker. And like more than half of the population is youth. So that's crazy. So half of it like is jobless, of course, because they're either studying or jobless. But like basically everybody is kind of hoping to work for the state because this is the only way for you to have a salary. So this is also how like French people from Europe and France see people from French Guiana, being that people who are just fed by the state, which is kind of true, because like if you don't do that, you just have enough income. So that's logic, you know. Of course.
But then the people with the higher ranks who are working for the state in French Guiana are not necessarily your people. They would have...
depends, but I mean, mainly they would be people from France who are coming in French Guiana with a special salary because you have this, how do you call that, kind of... expatriate kind of extra money if you go to French Guiana, because you know it's hard and it's far away and it's like wild, so you should have an extra money to survive this wildness. So and also the taxes. So of course they would be like teachers, people from kind of government, but like city council, blah, 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 military, blah, blah, blah. And of course, they're going to have the highest salary. And then you also have people who basically had been decent of colonial families. I mean, basically such as mine, basically, and part of this family would have been like, actually wealthy since some centuries. So they do have also, not always, but sometimes like jobs that are secured and with high salaries.
Interesting. And then in terms of, so most people who are working would just be working for the state?
I mean, a lot of them. You do have private stuff, but I mean, for now, when I left French Guiana, there were not that much private companies.
But when we think about it, right, like France went there because there are natural resources to be exploited. And that probably brings in quite a bit of money for France, but it's not going back to people. And where are the jobs that is in, you know, whatever that is needed to be done to exploit those resources, are they not available for people in French Guiana?
I mean, what could I take as example? I could do like space work, which is mainly in the space area.
Construction.
No, you know, not only construction, but also and
Deforestation.
you have, you know, as how do you call that? What's the name of this state company that is specialized in like space agency?
What do they
Like,
do?
you know, like SPACE, like, you know, the space T, like, I don't know, like,
You mean like
wait.
to the universe, space?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. That's the thing.
Why would they be based there?
Because we have we are almost on the
Equator.
equator, which
Oh,
is
okay.
one of the best, the closest thing you have to. How do you explain that? It's the closest to the sky to the I don't know how to
So
explain.
it's wait, but they don't launch rockets from there.
Yes, they do.
Ah, they don't.
Russian and Americans and yes, European people do
Oh,
launch from there.
interesting. But then our workers from French Guiana?
Nope.
Okay.
So that's why I wanted to take this example. Maybe now it's they actually do have more people from local people, but I mean definitely they all come from Europe or Russia or someone. I mean they do come from Europe. And this for me, one of the main example is that of course, because people don't, I mean we get the real university only 10 years ago. You cannot have engineer to work there because we do not have those skills. Of course, you cannot employ. Anyway, this is part of the example. You could have other example of the
Like oil.
yes, oil and the how do you call that? Gold
Gold
digging.
mining.
Yeah, gold
So,
mining.
jobs in gold mining, for example, would that be available to local people, or they would export that labor to neighboring countries?
I mean, it would be available, of course, but I think it will be only for the lowest job, I think. But however, I don't know that much because what the biggest issue is that you have illegal gold mining from other countries, such as Brazil and so on. And yep, and also Americans. They
So
do love to help.
illegal meaning that they come through the borders and just do it, or that they got permission from France.
No. Illegal meaning they come without permission. And
Okay.
but the other thing is that also, of course, France is actually kind of control. I mean, which is normal because it's the state is controlling who can have exclusivity to the French Guiana gold. So, and of course, I mean, the job, as I heard last time that we had a big case of that thing that France, the French president actually give the exclusivity to one company. I didn't heard of like people who were employed by this company. So issue as well as oil, but of course, oil you will have people who are employed, but I don't think it will be like a highest rank of the company kind of job.
We have a lot of conversations these days, especially with China opening up the new Silk Road, which expands all the way from many Southeast Asian countries, and it goes all the way to Europe. And I don't know, a lot of the conversations was that this is going to provide jobs for people in developing countries and raise them out of poverty. But the fact is that, who actually benefits from that? Native people, indigenous people, people who are local, are they the biggest beneficiary of that? And in the end, they are the ones who are bearing the cost of that exploitation and that destruction to the environment. So
I think this question today, I mean, before I was really asking myself this question, like who's benefiting this? Meaning, of course, if they have jobs, which is mainly the first step of needs that people need, basically. But like today, I would say like the thing is, what are the benefits of that? I mean, of course, they do need jobs, but if they are not empowered, I mean, emancipated, meaning that they don't actually learn from it, get a training, get all the stuff that make them able to protect themselves and protect what are good for the country, blah, 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 and good for the people, meaning they do not benefit from it. So that's why when people say like, yes, I'm going to give you jobs and blah, 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 people don't need jobs. They actually need other people to empower them to create their fucking own jobs. Then that's the, because you don't need someone to tell you do that. You need someone to be like behind your back and watch your back while you are fucking doing stuff for your own life. Fuck.
But that's so true, isn't it? Like, we had this conversation as well in the social sector in France, where, you know, in Marseille, in what was that, the street called again? That area that was basically being ostracized, and that the living conditions are really bad, and there are mafias in there. What was that area called? Quartier Nord.
Ah, yes, Quartier Nord.
Yeah. Quartier Nord. Because we were having this conversation about how, I mean, in the social sector, when you have money for these sort of areas where, you know, poverty is high, or the unemployment is high, a lot of that money goes into, well, a lot of times white people who are working in NGOs or social sector who are going there trying to help people out of the situation. But then what would really help is that, you know, people from that community takes on those jobs and help their own people.
Yeah, totally. And that had been proved many times in my previous job that actually, you know, those people come. And yes, they have the best intentions, of course. But the thing is, they are going to earn a money that could have been the salary of someone from the neighbor who would have known better, do better. I mean, yep, that's it. Sorry, not sorry.
What was your previous job?
Oh, I was working for the, how do you call that, biennial, international European biennial of contemporary art, if we could say so. But I was especially working for the education department, which is really working with people and communities, which was the best job of my life, also the most tiring. But yes, basically I was working with the people, which is the best thing in the world. But the thing is, you are facing the reality of what's the use of your own job, what's your place, what you are able to do and what you're not able to do. And we were working with those communities in the northern neighborhood of Marseille. And the best that I think that I learned and that was the most useful was that even me, that I could say I'm part of a certain community, just have to fucking shut up and fucking be happy that I do have a salary. And if I can just give, you know, I'm taking the what I should do when I am able to do it is that giving the stage to the one who have the right to be on the stage when I do not need to be on the stage. So, I mean, and like a lot of other colleagues kind of learned that at some point, this is not your place to do stuff. And the best project, the one that were the most successful for me, was that when we just gave the mic to the people and the money to the people to do whatever they want to do. And we do not have the space to judge anything from that because we need to fucking shut up.
And how was that? What was the outcome?
I mean, the outcome was that like we were working with some organizations and of inhabitants, and some of them got actually opportunities from the state, meaning new fundings, new money, new visibility from the newspaper and so on. And they were also, I mean, there was a fight, a political fight, let's say so, for one of those organizations because they were wanting to rename a street by the name of a youngster that was that who actually died from some, I mean, 20 years ago, something like this, by the extreme right. How
terrorist?
Do you call that? No. The extreme right, you know, extremist, I mean, right wing would you say that?
Right-wing extremists
Of France, like the Front National. And they were kind of fighting for like dozens and dozens of years to rename the street, and the city council was kind of not listening to that. And I'm not going to say it's because of us, because actually the fight was all led by this organization, but we just like help it a little bit, just, you know, pushing a little bit, because we were having good relationship with the city, let's say so, and blah, 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 social washing, blah, blah, blah. And it just helped it. And they got their fucking renaming of this street. And it was a huge victory. And I was so happy that they could have it. And it was, you know, big, because it was for, I mean, Black people, basically. So it was, wow, you know, it wasn't our victory. Like, it almost has nothing to do almost with us. And they just did it like almost on their own, you know, and I was like, wow, that's great. And they were so happy and so proud, and it helped the whole organization that was a recording a studio to maybe think about their future and see what they could do after, you know. And it was super cool. And I was like, wow, so, you know, emotional about that, because the best is like when you do almost nothing, you're just in the shadow and just you just see people like, yes, doing it, just fucking doing it, yeah.
But you know, this is like really interesting in terms of the social and political dynamics in France, with people who have come from ex-colonies, and it is quite a large population. Like for example, in Marseille, that would be there are quite a lot of Algerians, and when in education you don't necessarily learn about that history. And France is like a place where you kind of have to be French to fit in. And then people end up with, you know, second, third generation with that sort of dual identity where you've got your traditions and your culture, and that doesn't quite, it isn't quite in sync with the sort of French culture where, you know, you maybe at home you're not supposed to take alcohol, and outside everyone is taking alcohol at parties, and you know, that sort of duality and all of that not being able to be talked about when that is, you know, people who are living around you, people who are working with you, people who are in school with you, and those stories not being heard, and there isn't that sort of outlet or opportunities to process those emotions or confusion. And that is problematic.
Yeah. I mean, this is for me, I mean, in my opinion, is the most problematic thing in these colonial issues in France, of course. I mean, this idea that the French identity has to be what bring people together, for me, it's very wrong. And because it doesn't give space for something else, because it's like, yes, of course, you might be different, but we are all reunited in this French identity, which is so painful and so hurtful when you are actually not part of the what people call majority. Because let's be honest, but like a big part of my friend, like my French friends who like has background with the grandparents, parents who are not from continental France. So, which is that's super crazy. I mean, all French people are linked from like from any, like might be from something super small or something super big. They are linked from this, like to this history, which is crazy. And when you are this, it's not more than being different, you know, it's like you can have this like shared history. You could have been like growing up exactly the same as any, let's say French people, as people call themselves French, meaning real French. and you might have growing up exactly the same, but the simple fact that you don't have like parents from here or grandparents from here, or this like little thing that makes your whole understanding different, means that you don't fit in this French identity, which is very problematic.
What is the French identity?
That's a fucking good question. I do not have an answer. I mean, French identity means that you share, I mean, in my opinion, it's that you share a common history and a common understanding of what is this country. So, I mean, I would say that, but it's this is my definition because I have it growing up like this, learning this history of France, which is not the history of this, which is not my history. And I feel like this is a big thing that like bring French people together. You have to know the revolution. You have to understand the revolution. You have
be
to
proud
understand
of it.
This is exactly, you have to be proud of it. You have to be proud of a certain philosophy of this thing. And I've been used to say that, well, if you disagree with a whole country philosophy, you can always move out. But today, like I've been saying that like years ago, and now I'm like, I was really ignorant because, for example, people from Algeria, they don't have the privilege to actually move anywhere, you know? And of course, the people who have the privilege to move are the privileged people that always have all the privileges. So, I mean, not all, but yes. So basically now that you're, you know, I've been there for quite a while and I'm thinking, how is it that do I feel French? Because when I'm talking, for example, I was talking with this like Tinder date and he was telling me, but you are very French, exactly like white people. And I was like,
interesting.
I do not feel French, you know, I feel like French half or French apart, but not full French. And it was like, of course you are. It was like legit, you know, it was really like, of course. I mean, what are you saying? You know,
but Prima, you learn over the years how to communicate in that French manner.
But yeah, but that's the thing. This guy was like, but you talk exactly like them. You know, there was this way of think of talking. You talk exactly like them, behave exactly like them, and blah, blah, blah. And I felt like a kind of spy, you know? It was super weird. It was super weird because he was really addressing me as if I was this person that kind of learned to behave the right way. And it was super weird because of course there is a thing that if you kind of want to survive or integrate kind of, I mean, meaning have the basics of having friends, job, university, of course you have to behave like the other people because if not, you're alone. For me, it's like a survival kind of skill. But anyway, come on. This is not the spy kind of, I mean, it was super weird because it means that of course in their minds, a French person have a special definition and they were like kind of ticking
what I was boxes,
the boxes. And it was really really weird because like main like the first one was like, oh, but you speak French perfectly. And I was like, well, if you actually were from here, you would understand that my French is not that perfect. I can't tell you so. And but well, yeah, of course, languages I learned to speak like this. I wasn't speaking like this before.
But you had it difficult as well along the way. Maybe you can, you know, like speak a little bit in the accent that you would have been speaking in from French Guiana, and then in like the proper French, just so that listeners can have an idea of what we're talking about.
Yeah, of course. So this is the biggest thing. The most interesting thing is that the accent thing. When I arrived, actually in my head, I was like, I was speaking French, you know. It was like, of course, it's French. I mean, this is the thing I was learning in school with white people, meaning European people. And it was, of course, it's French. And then I arrived and like French was totally different. And I was like not understanding half of it. And I was like, what the fuck? It's happening. And people were having a fucking accent that was so different, and all the expression, because I actually understood that in French Guiana, we do have a lot of mix with Portuguese and English. So that's why we have a lot of like kind of translation of some expression coming from there. So it's French, but actually it's from Portuguese or English background. So that's why we were having a lot of different expression. And when I arrived and I was like kind of like speaking with them, the people were like, what the fuck? And I was like, fuck, what am I doing? Why people don't understand me? And I really felt like a foreigner. I've been traveling a lot. And I think my biggest cultural shock was actually from French Guiana to France. From France to France. That was really, really weird. And I just learned to unlearn my accent, meaning unlearning was kind of getting rid of the stuff that will make people kind of tick and kind of react to something that they were not used to. So
can you say something in like the French Guyanian accent and in the French accent?
What could I say? Okay, we have this sentence. Okay, we have this sentence which is kind of super harsh. Which, I mean, that I would say, it's like when you think that life is easy and you would say, do you think that life is like a bowl of pumpkin soup? Because, you know, pumpkin soup is like super, super like sweet and smooth and so on. So basically when you are, I mean, in French Guiana, when you are having a, yes, you think you just come and like everything is owned and you're just, people just say like, do you think it's like a bowl of the pumpkin soup? And I was like saying that to all my French friends and they were like, what the fuck do you have with your fucking soup? Because we do have this like kind of traditional thing of eating a certain, eating soup. Of pumpkin soup at a certain moment of the year. So it was super harsh to me because nobody was understanding. And there is no, I don't know if you're having something to talk about this feeling in France, in French. I mean, you would have a la vie est facile, like, do you think life is easy? But it's like,
yeah,
no reference to anything other than that. And
how does it sound in French, the pumpkin soup expression?
I mean, in French, I would say, est-ce que tu crois que la vie, c'est un bowl de soupe de citrouille? So it's super funny because like in French Guyana, you would say, tu as cru que la vie, c'était un bowl de tolo mancho. Maybe because we are using other names to name these vegetables.
Interesting. I wouldn't have understood that.
Yeah. But even I said with the French accent, because I don't even remember how to do the French accent. It would be like, I mean, it would be like, tu as cru que c'était la vie, c'est un bol de tolo mancho. I mean, even that it's Marseille. Yeah. Oh, I cannot. What the fuck? It's crazy. Yeah. I feel foreigner to myself.
Yeah. But France, it's really... I mean, I lived in UK for 4 years and then I moved to France. I was there for a little bit more than a year. And it just felt like, I felt like being in the UK, even though my accent has changed since then, since, you know, moving out of Singapore and going there, because accent's different and Singaporean accent is not necessarily that easy to understand for outsiders. I felt like if I really wanted to, I could still call UK home. I felt like I could still settle there and build my community and whatever. France, on the other hand, was that, I mean, I had community there and I had friends, but I felt like it wasn't a country where I could live. You know, I felt like no matter how hard I try, maybe if I try really, really hard, I can be very fluent in French and I can understand most of what everyone is saying. But it's like, I just kind of felt like, you know, I'm always going to be a foreigner anyway in France. That was my sentiment.
Yeah. I think it's a common feeling among foreigners. And I've been, you know, for this Eyes on You movie, when we had these friends of mine who were saying, but you know, French people, they are nice. They are super cool, super great, really want to help. But when you go too far, too deep into the French culture, I mean, into maybe too high in their job rank and so on, they just like give a full stop and be like, oh, calm down, not too far. And it feels a bit like this. However, I don't know if it's exactly the same in any other country, because anyway, I'm foreigner in any other countries, but yes, it's totally a common feeling. And I would also say I cannot call France my home. I wouldn't say that. And I mean, anyway, I cannot call a French Guiana my home neither. So.
But you've been in France for a long time. Is it 10 years already?
Yep. Yes, but it's not about it being a long time or not. It's about, do you feel like part of it? And I do not feel part of it. So that's the thing. And I don't know if it's because of me or because of the country or because of whatever. But I mean, definitely it's for me, it's because wherever I go in this country, I will always have someone who remind me that I'm not part of it. So what can I do? You know, it's like French people would ask me, where do you come from? No, I mean, for real. And I would be like, my passport is French, fucking French, and my mom is fucking French, and my grandparents fucking French, and my grandparents is fucking from Britain. So please, like, I'm fucking French. But anyway, and like fucking Tinder date would ask me, oh, you know, you are, I mean, I'm not used to this kind of woman. And I would be like, and they would be like, yeah, you know, the standard European kind of, and I would be like, okay, I'm good to hear, you know. So what do you want me to? I mean, for me, it's totally like logic that I don't feel home.
I remember, I mean, because I found myself in a lot of situations because I attend lectures or, you know, conferences and stuff when I was in Marseille, even though when I first arrived, I couldn't really understand a lot of French, I still joined anyway. And I realized that in a lot of these situations, I found myself being sort of like the only non-white person. And it's almost, you know, when I speak up, that there is an inertia for people to listen to what I actually have to say. You know, I don't know if it's because of my accent or that I didn't speak perfect French or that, you know, because I look Asian and I am a woman and I'm a young woman. It just felt like I had to do more to actually have my voice heard.
Yeah, of course, because they're not used to listen to other people. this is really funny because I had this example of this figure of like a French, I don't remember exactly, but she's basically a big kind of the lead of this post-colonial thinking in France. And she was telling us that for her to be able to be part of the discussion over post-colonial stuff and history, she had to learn all the codes of those discussion and those political moves. Because otherwise, when she was like going to the TV, going to the radio, people were just like cutting her off because she was not speaking the same language, not having the same codes. And she really said that it was about like she was humiliated and so on and so on. You know, she had to fucking learn all the codes to be listened to, not even like people having a real discussion, just be listened to. And she was like Black and a woman. So she has to fight for it. And this is the thing that we're, I mean, I even me remember conversation that I had with my friends and about my own fucking continent. Can you imagine? I was discussing with like some fucking weeks ago, I was discussing with the guy and I would say, he was like, yes, you know, you should be vegan because blah, 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 especially you from South America and they're destroying your forest because of the cow and the meat. And I was like, well, I've been growing up in this fucking forest and I can tell you, yes, it's part of it, but it's not the main issue. And he was like, you don't know anything, you're biased. And I was like, the f*** you f*** know with people like telling you what's happening in my f*** country.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing, you know, when you're coming from a historic background where you all your ancestors used to be from this empire that it's looking from above the world. You know, in France, we had this like, French people were had the, this universal exhibition who were showing all the talent and the science of the world commissioned by French people. Can you imagine when you had this background, historical background of just saying, looking everything from above, knowing everything, studying everything? Of course, you're going to tell someone from Asia or from South America, you don't know what you're talking about. Even if you have no education, you know, even if you, of course, you're used, historically, you're used to fucking know better. So what? You know, I even had this thing. I was looking at the documentary with a friend, and this friend was saying basically, oh, you know, about Africa, basically. And this friend was like, oh, but you know, French has actually studied a lot Africa. And I was like, I mean, good for them, but not because they studied it means that it's good. I mean, you know, I was like, well, the best would have been African people studying themselves and telling their own history. But I mean, it's not more legitimate to have French people studying it. So. Mm. Sorry. But it was funny because it wasn't in their brain. It wasn't bad to say that. It was just like, oh, of course, French people have been studying it. It's really good. You know, it's like adding to the knowledge of humanity. And I was like, life is hard, you know. is hard.
But it's also like that knowledge or that perspective is then passed on to everyone else who has to follow that curriculum and that education. And it's, you know, in Asia, this was something that I observed since a number of years ago, with this sense of self-discrimination, you know, that the Western body, the Western look is more ideal, that it is more pretty, and that the Asian looks, even though we are Asians ourselves, it's lower and it's less. Mm-hmm. And not even realizing or recognizing that sort of self-discrimination, when actually, you know, all of that it's a consequence of colonization.
It's really
sad, but I don't know. I find like having conversations on racism, on colonization, really difficult with people who have not experienced it, who have been privileged. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying it's impossible to have this conversation with all white people, because I've had white friends who are, you know, really conscious about it and took the time to study, to learn and to educate themselves about it, and have been such supportive allies in this. But it is so difficult to communicate that to people who don't have the awareness of it. And you know, in the end, when you talk about your experiences, it will be met with a lot of defensiveness. Mm. And then it's almost like a counterattack, and that they would never understand or validate your experiences. You know, they would reject it.
Yeah. You know, I've been, I had a long conversation with a friend who basically, it was a white friend who was telling me why it was an issue for white people to have those conversations. And she was telling, the thing is, first, they don't feel like they are concerned by it. It's not their problem. Mm-hmm. But second of all, as we come and kind of guilty them, and of course, they don't want to be guilty because they're not guilty. But the thing is to unlearn this thing of feeling guilty and so on and so on, to understand that it's not about that, takes a fucking lot of time and willingness and so on and so on. And basically, I had basically a conversation with a guy, like explaining him that he shouldn't take the place of the people when talking about specific topics that had nothing to do with him, but all to do with them. And he was like, But what is it? It's totally like, are you kind of forbidding me to talk about something? Does it mean that some people can talk about stuff and some other? No, what the fuck? It's like censorship, blah, blah, blah. And I got mad because it was actually hurtful. It was super painful to listen to that, you know? It was like over my capacity to be calm. I couldn't. And so there was this friend with whom I was talking with, who actually took the conversation on her shoulders. I left just like some meters away and she started to talk with him, and the discussion was totally different. She was basically saying exactly the same as me, but the conversation was different because she was addressing like being the, but you know, we are the same. I understand it, but it's not about that. And when I was saying, you shouldn't do that because you don't have the right to do that, you know? And these two ways of like addressing this issue really make the difference.
But, you know, it's so difficult because in the end, it's always on us. When we try and speak up about it, of course we would be angry because, you know, you are facing that every single freaking day. And it's painful and it's hurtful and you don't necessarily have the outlet or the platforms to talk about it because a lot of times people just don't want to hear it. And then when it gets to a point where some conversation like just triggers this point where it bubbles beyond the capacity that you can take it, of course you'd be angry, and it's completely human to be angry. But that will be taken from the other perspective and point of view as, oh, you've lost your cool, chill, you know. And then it becomes like our problem because we had lost our chill. And, you know, it's why having these sort of conversations, it's so difficult.
Yeah, but the thing is then because that kind of triggered something in me, because then I had this other colleague, really good colleague of mine, who started to subscribe to white people course so that white people can get together to understand colonial stuff and racism stuff. And that was like white exclusive, meaning that they were all together to understand it and without like basically spending the energy of a people, of color, some non-white people, to get like all the energy to make them understand. And it was really like white work, if we could say something like this. And then I kind of understand, because this colleague then came back and she was like, but you know, maybe it is my job as a white person to have those conversations also, you know? And she was like, maybe we do have those jobs, and also, someone else with whom I had a huge discussion, and we went through the path because I had this kind of onion talks at my workplace. Now I'm not working anymore there, so I'm free to talk about it because my contract is over. But we had this exactly like onion talks kind of stuff, which was named Discuss What Matters there. And we had like, basically talking about all the stuff that are wrong. And racism is like was at the core of it. And some people were super hurt by some words and some stuff. But on the path, on the way, some of them kind of got that they need to do this path. And I don't need to be there to guide them. You know? But they could do that on their own because they do have to like destroy what was there at the core of their mind and way of thinking, but also helped by other white people who actually got on this path. So I would say, of course, I mean, come on, we don't have to educate, we all know this is not our place to educate those people. Come on. We all know that, but I mean, they're gonna figure out something. Of course, it's super harsh to have those discussions. This is the thing, we have to accept that this is our pain on our fucking back, that it's going to be hard for us. I mean, at some point, we're not equal. I remember I was discussing with this like a second or third director of my workplace. And he was like, but you know, you are an activist. And I was like, I am not an activist. The thing is for me to have the basics, to be equal to you, to have the same rights, I fucking have to fight for it. to have exactly the same thing as you. I have to fight where you don't have to fight. So that's why you think I'm activist. I'm just fucking doing what I need to do to have the same thing as you. And you know, when I like said that, it was like, and it never actually, I'm sure it never crossed his mind what I was saying, you know. And I actually vocalized it, and I was like, yes, that's exactly that. I'm not politically fighting for something. I am personally fucking giving my energy to have the same rights as all of you guys. Fuck. Exhausting.
Yep. I don't know. With Black Lives Matter, things are changing. Don't know how fast, how far, but at least there is a conversation. Not all parts of the world, but there is some form of conversation.
Yeah, that's the thing that makes me like the most hopeful, is that I'm pretty sure some like years ago, I wouldn't have been able to even be in the director office or send emails about those kind of stuff. And I actually had the space to do so. And those space do exist. They're not that much. They're not that much space like this, but they do fucking exist. And this should be normal. It is not, but it's amazing.
So what is next, Prima? What's next on your plate?
To be honest, I really love to do this discuss what matters, onion talks like kind of stuff. And I mean, I'm working on my movies, blah, 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 movie making and so on. And also documentary, that my documentary is totally going to talk about like this perception and relationships in this post-colonial stuff. I mean, I'm still writing on it, but it's going to be part of it. And anyway, I really, really want to be kind of a platform maker, facilitator. I mean, I really loved it. And I still love it. And I think this is part of my destiny, my faith, let's say, to fucking bring people together and to create more than conversation, to create place where people disagree, fucking disagree, and where I can smash their face to the wall.
You don't mean this literally. Let's clarify that for the audience.
Yes, no, maybe not. But you know, there's this museum in India called what's the name of it? It's basically it's a museum that is specialized in conversation where people disagree really violently.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's super, that's super so nice. Cool. I hope after the lockdown, I mean, all this COVID thing, I would love to make like a smaller trip and go there maybe like for some days, because it's amazing to have this kind of like the best conversation I had was when I was disagreeing with people, but there was still place for conversation. That was the best. Museum of conflict.
Oh, okay.
Uncomfortable conversations.
Interactive museum with exhibits designed to facilitate dialogue about historical conflicts via art. See, there is the power of arts to do so many things.
Yep, totally.
So if there is something that someone can do to create change in this world, what would it be?
That's a good question. I mean, for me, the best that could be done is like someone who just like multiply, spread this thing of, disseminate the how could you say that, the ability or the understanding that you're not the fucking center of the world. I mean,
so basically moving away from your ego.
For me, that's the best thing that could happen to the world.
Yeah, be humble. Yeah, check humble. On your ego, mate. Let's end this with something light. So since we started onion salt in the kitchen, so what is a dish that has onions that you've been craving, or that you've really enjoyed in the past days?
with onion. Don't be like this. Don't be like this. Oh my God, don't be like this. There is this dish that I'm craving that was actually eating in South America, but was from either Vietnamese cuisine or Chinese cuisine. I don't remember. And it's fried fish or meat that is... we call that here pepper and salt. Pepper and salt.
That's weird.
That's weird. But it's like, and then you just like fry it with onions and pepper, and it's spicy. But you have a lot of onions, like fried onions and fried pepper, and with the meat, fried meat or fried fish. How do you call that with the
fish cake?
You know, you put. No, you put the meat or the fish into the in flour and
batter.
In an egg.
Yeah, batter. So it's like a cutlet, chicken like.
Yeah, cutlet. Kinda. Yeah, exactly. But then you fry it again, and you make it fry with onions and pepper, and ta-da! It's super good.
Interesting.
And hot and it's spicy. I love.
So it's like covered in onions.
Yep.
Oh, that's really cool. I don't think I've had that before.
It's super good. I don't know how. Okay, I'm going to look at it in the internet. But yes, super good, guys. You should try this recipe. It's super simple and super good.
Everyone's got lots of time now with COVID to like, you know, experiment in the kitchen.
Yeah. Guys, go to the kitchen, bake some stuff and cook some fish and onions because fucking onions are delicious.
Cool. Thank you, Prima.
Thank you, Fia.
Hello, Onions Talk listeners. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, it would really help if you can leave a review on iTunes or like us on Facebook. Otherwise, subscribe and share it with people whom you think will enjoy this. Special thanks to Andrea for the music. Catch you next episode.
Are you feeling pandemic fatigue? Do you feel exhausted, anxious, or frustrated, but have nowhere to express? Here's how we want to help. We have carefully designed the Reconnection Playground online sessions to facilitate a safe space to be in touch with our feelings and to connect with one another. Films and artistic methods of expression will be introduced as we go on this journey together to heal and support one another. The topics will include sense making, mental health, climate crisis, and purpose finding. We will gradually build a community of change makers through these workshops, so do join us. Here is how you can win a free ticket to the Reconnection Playground session. Go to ratethispodcast.com/onionstalk, leave a rating and review, take a screenshot and tag us on social media. Winners will be selected at the end of each month. Link in description, don't miss out, hope to see you there!